Now, last week, we were very fortunate in having with us Karen Moreau, who's the executive director of the New York Petroleum Council. She made a very cogent and compelling argument why horizontal hydraulic fracturing is important for the state of New York. She framed it in terms of economics, why it's so very important. She was kind of light on environmental impact. She only responded to questions. This week we're going to have, I think, an entirely different kind of presentation. I'd like to call upon Dr. Lawrence Kadish, who is an environmentalist, and also, I believe, out in Taconic, sits on their town council. That's Dr. Correct. Watch the Cords, to introduce this evening's speaker.
I don't know that I'm an environmentalist any more than anyone else sitting in this room is or should be. It's my pleasure to introduce Tony LaSalvia as a speaker tonight. Tony grew up in Long Island, did his university at Adelphi, and then taught school for several years before going into industry, where he was an environment quality control manager. Tony's undergraduate degree was in biology, BA, and after 10 years in industry, he returned to school and achieved a master's in teaching science. Tony currently teaches, that master's, by the way, was at SUNY Albany. Tony currently teaches at New Lebanon Central High School. He teaches courses in earth science, environmental science, and a course for advanced students in science research. Tony was a member of the Environmental Council of Columbia County, and also currently is a member and a volunteer for the Stockport Watershed Alliance. Tony and his wife Agnes, who is sitting here, have been very active in community affairs, both in town of Taconic, where they reside, and also in the county area wide. Tony, welcome.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you all for coming. Tonight we're going to present a little bit different view from last week on the issue of hydrofracking. And I think we'll start out tonight with a video called The Sky is Pink by Josh Fox, who also gave us Gasland. I don't know if you've seen that, but this is a follow-up to that, so I'm going to begin with that, and then we'll go on to a presentation that I've made. This is a typical drilling pad. Drilling pads can hold as many as six wells. And they actually do this to save on space so that you don't have wells dotting all over the place. You have pads dotting all over the place, as you see. So what is hydraulic fracturing? It's the trying to get some fractures in the rock. This is a hard shale. You need to fracture it so that you can get the gas out. And that's basically what it's for. It's the result of pressurized fluid, and that fluid is not a milkshake. Why do it? There are good reasons to do this. It's to get rid of the petroleum, the natural gas, or other substances out of the ground. We've been mining things for generations and generations. There's no question we need these products. It's estimated to be 616 trillion cubic feet of natural gas under the United States. That's a tremendous amount of energy. That's enough to support us for about 100 years. That is good and that is bad. I'll get to that in a moment. This natural gas is better than gasoline and it is better than coal. Less emissions. There's no question about it. It is cleaner. The good part of this is that natural gas could be a really important transition fuel. We need a transition fuel. We've got to get rid of coal. We've got to get rid of oil. They're both very dirty. We've got a huge problem with climate change. We've got a huge problem with acid rain. And we need to get rid of these fuels. We've been using them far too long. So natural gas is a good transition fuel. It's a lot less polluting. But it needs to be a transition to much cleaner energy forms such as wind, solar, biofuels, ocean currents, wave action, and biomass. We can do this in this country. We just have to get off our duffs and do it. The bad part about this, come on, Mark, this 100 years worth of fuel sounds great, right? 100 years worth of fuel, that's terrific. The bad part of that, though, is you've got 100 years worth of a relatively inexpensive fuel. What do you think is going to happen to the incentive to invest in alternatives? What happened in the 70s? We had the oil embargo. And after the oil embargo, we started to make cars that were efficient. They were smaller. They were fuel efficient. How long did that last? Not very long. Shortly after, we started making SUVs. And we've been making SUVs that get, you know, maybe 13 to 20 miles per gallon for a long, long time. So once we see the price come down, we just forget all about the issues and say, oh, let's do what Americans do best, drive a big car. So where is it? This is the Marcellus Shale area. It's the white outline area, stretching down from, where is that, West Virginia, mm-hmm. all the way up through Pennsylvania and into New York. There are a few areas within this map. The brown is U.S. lands, that federal lands that are not going to be explored. And there are different colors here that represent how much pressure there is under the ground and how easy it is to get the gas on, so on and so forth. But basically, we're looking at this white outlined area. Sometimes this works. Okay, so you're looking at this area, and here we are in New York. Yeah, we're over here in Columbia County, not in the Marcellus Shale. So, you know, Columbia County, yeah, we're kind of safe. But remember something. Water under the ground does not stop here at Pennsylvania's border, nor does it stop with the Marcellus Shale. Water can migrate to any area. And I'm not proposing that it will migrate to Columbia County if it's contaminated in some place in the Marcellus Shale, but we need to be cautious about it. So that's where it is. So how is it done? Okay, this kind of shows you, if you were here last week, you got the idea that what they do here is they drill down and you're looking at about a mile down. Anyway, it's about a mile down and, oh, it works, sorry, look at it, sorry. Back up a second. Okay, so you go down about a mile with a vertical drilling. Vertical drilling's been done for a long, long time, fairly successfully, less polluting. And then you drill almost horizontally, as you can see from the diagram there. You drill to a point where, you know, you're into the shale, and you begin to make small holes in your piping. Then you send down your mix of a lot of water. We'll get to that in a minute. And you pressurize this mix of water and the chemicals and some sand, and you fracture the rock. Fracture the rock, releases the gas, goes into the pipe. You got slick water, is a lot of the chemicals you use to make that water what they call slick water, because it's going to reduce friction. When you're going down that far in the pipe size that they're going down, you need to reduce friction. And with the pressures that they're using, you need to reduce friction. They use a very fine sand as a proppant to hold open those fissures once they are opened. Otherwise, they'll close right back up. So you need to do that. And then there's the flowback fluid. All this fluid comes back up. Not all the fluid comes. A lot of the fluid comes back up. And they now claim that they are using a closed system. Prior to this, they were using open ponds with liners, but these were open ponds, very susceptible to an accident. But now they claim that they're going to be using closed systems, to recover as much of this flowback material as they can to reuse someplace else. The I was going to tell you about, I had my own well fracked. I had it hydrofracked because I wasn't getting enough water. Hydrofracking for water is a lot different than hydrofracking for gas. It was very successful. It didn't contaminate anything because all I did is put water down my well, put pressure to it. It opened up the cracks, did a great job. I'm very pleased with Kaiser Drilling. They did a great job. So it's, you know, it's a good thing when it's used properly. They didn't use the chemicals or the propane or anything like that. So areas of concern. I had an opportunity today to speak to a woman from Pennsylvania. And it was only today that I finally got to speak to her. Her name is Barbara Coyle. Her husband is Jim Shore, and they lived in Bradford County, Pennsylvania, for the last 38 years. She, as she described it, they were hippies in 1974 who left Staten Island to move to Pennsylvania to have a farm. They had a 50-acre farm. They grew their own food. It was like a commune for a while, and then many of the people left, and they stayed on the land. They had their family on the land. They built a couple of houses on the land. They were, in 2002, they were asked to lease their rights to the gas companies for $25 an acre. I know last week we heard it was quite a bit more. I think it was about $5,000 an acre. But back in 2002, it was $25 an acre for a five-year lease. At least that's what they thought it was. At the end of the 5 years, when they tried to get their land out from under the lease, they were told, no, it's not 5 years, it's 10 years. Fortunately for them, they were able to wait it out. Their land was not drilled on, and they could not fight the big companies. They just knew that it was way too much money for them to fight these companies, so they didn't even bother to try and fight it. They were fortunate, they waited it out, and they didn't have it. In 2010 came along, and the companies came in and started to industrialize the entire area. And by industrializing, you'll see some of the pictures I have and what you saw on the video. They come in there. They had a paved road in front of their house that turned to a dirt road because the truck traffic was so intense. These are huge, heavy trucks. Their pavement couldn't take it. The pavement was destroyed. It ended up being a dirt road. Who's going to pay for the repair of that? She didn't mention that to me, but that's what was taking place. They had six wells within a mile of their home. They heard quite a bit of noise from the trucks, quite a bit of noise from the drilling operation, quite a bit of noise from the compressors that were going on during this operation. They had lots and lots of traffic. They had fumes from the diesel and all kinds of things, and they said that's enough. We can't. This is not what we came here for. This is not the kind of lifestyle we want to live with. So they decided to sell. And fortunately for them, their neighbor, who had 500 acres and leased a good portion of it, decided to buy up their farm. So they now moved. They just recently, I think, this week, moved to Ithaca, in the hopes that they can get away from this whole problem. She told me that, in her opinion, Pennsylvania government gave the key to the kingdom to the gas companies. In other words, they let them run the show. Pennsylvania was so ill-prepared for this. They did really not much to stop it, and the gas companies were running the show. She told me about Act 13. Now, Act 13 is pretty involved. It has to do with all kinds of regulations. But part of that regulation is a gag order on doctors. Doctors are given the information from the gas companies to treat their patients. But they cannot disclose, even to their patients, what is in that material that's making them sick. They're fighting that, obviously. They had to have a non-disclosure statement from the doctors that they couldn't disclose what was in there to the patients. It's kind of scary.
Is that a federal act or is that a state then?
That was state. That's a Pennsylvania Act, Act 13. She told me of people that were poor, renting a place, and they were thrown out of their homes because the landlord could get more money from the gas company than they were getting from these people. So these people were displaced. They're just thrown out because the gas company was going to pay them more for the rent. She told me about the man camps. These jobs that they all talk about are going to be created are not really going to be created by for local people. These jobs are coming from other states where these processes are going on. So you end up with these man camps, and these man camps have an increase in crime. This is, again, Barbara telling me this. She was on a rape prevention council in her area, and she says rapes and assaults had gone up dramatically. Drug use had gone up dramatically. So these man camps created big problems.
What is a man
camp? A man camp is where, I imagine there's some women there too, but they're called man camps because what you have is you have a large number of workers coming in from other states and they need some place to live. In their area, there were 6 new hotels built for these workers. And these hotels are now kind of empty right now because what has happened is the natural gas prices have gone down so low because of the glutton gas that they're really not drilling over there in Bradford County right now. They've kind of moved on to other places. She said a lot of the crews have gone to oil states to drill for oil because there's such a glut of natural gas right now that these places are losing out. The workers are moving on to other places. She spoke about Demick, and I don't know if you've heard about Demick, but Demick was in the first video, the Gasland video, where they described 2 dozen homes were without water due to intrusion of methane into their wells. And this is firsthand account from this woman telling me on the phone today. She knows this. These people still don't have water that they get. She mentioned that the mayor of Binghamton, New York, was sending water down to them, because they just couldn't use their well water anymore. It had too much methane in it. And then she told me about the large amounts of water that were taken out of the Susquehanna River, and I'm going to get into the water issue in a few moments, that the Susquehanna River was actually a lot lower than it usually is because of the large amounts of water that they're pulling out of that river to do this hydrofracking. She ended up telling me that the industry lies, if you can believe that. She was told by the industry, you won't even know we were here. So we'll see what that means. So let's move on to the first one of my concerns, and my most important concern is water. I have 2 facts about water. We need it all the time. Everything on Earth, every living thing on Earth needs fresh water all the time. That includes us. The other fact is fracturing can pollute it. So let's see what happens here. There are a couple of causes of water pollution. I mentioned the methane migration, result of casing and equipment failure. You saw that in the video. She also mentioned the gentleman that was on there, the scientist that was showing you how, you know, that if you get a crack in the cement, you're going to get the migration, so on and so forth. So it's definitely something to be concerned about. 5% failures, approximately 5% failures in new casings, and by 30 years down the line, you're looking at 50% failures. And that's been documented quite a number of times, as well as in the video. MIT did a study, 2011, evidence that natural gas migration into freshwater zones in some areas, most likely caused by substandard practices. Now, that's, you know, it makes it sound like, well, few operators. But we have a problem in New York State, and that's DEC doesn't have enough inspectors to take care of all this. If we don't have enough inspectors to take care of all this, I don't know about you, but I kind of think that there'll be some shortcuts taken, and that worries me a lot.
Who is the MIT Energy Initiative?
MIT, Massachusetts Institute.
Who funds
it? I could look that up at the end. Yeah, I have the bibliography at the end.
Because, I mean, if they're saying that if you really are good at what you're
you're doing, then it's, you're not going to have methane migration, then I guess they could control it so that you're really only the really good operators are doing it. But, you know, let's see who's actually...
We'll get to that at the end, if my sources say who exactly... I don't know that it's going to say who funded them. We could probably look that up at a later date, but... I want to finish this up, though, but... So you've got these situations where you're going to have some failures. And I think MIT is saying you're going to have some failures. You know, it certainly depends on who's doing it. It could be done right, but we know that, you know, from the Gulf oil spill, I mean, Halliburton's a big company. You think they'd do it right? Not really. My nephew, he does some work, and he travels around the state somewhat, and he had an opportunity to go out near west of Binghamton, and he decided he was going to take his camper with him, and he was going to go and camp, bring the family. They were going to camp because they do a lot of camping. So he had the camper. He went down into Pennsylvania to go to a campground and, you know, have a good time while he's working where he had to work. Well, they couldn't find any place to camp because of the amount of influx of workers from out of state that were coming to that Pennsylvania area to work. And all he kept hearing from the locals in Pennsylvania was their water quality stinks now. So, you know, it's just a little added attraction. This graph shows the distance from the nearest gas well and the amount of migration of methane. So the closer you are, got a lot of methane. Further away, less. And, you know, it really doesn't matter whether it's biogenic or thermogenic gas. If it's in your well, it's in your well. And as the video pointed out, you've got chances for, when you're drilling, for the biogenic gas, which is near the surface, to get into that well and travel along, migrate along, and get into the aquifers. So it's happening. And, you know, this clearly points out that this is happening. Leakage or improper disposal of fluids. And this is a case where the 36 cases of groundwater contamination. I didn't get any information of how extensive those 36 cases were. But it's 36 cases that the EPA has determined to be likely sources, hydrofracking to be likely source of the contamination. So it's happening. It isn't, you know, make-believe. It's really happening. So we get to the chemicals. This is rather interesting. So we have a study here. It was documented in Human and Ecological Risk Assessment, an international journal in 2011. So there's a whole bunch of chemicals, 632, used in the natural gas operation. 353s are well-described in the literature. And of these, you got 75% could affect skin, eyes, respiratory, and gastrointestinal systems. If you want more, you got 40 to 50% can affect the brain, the nervous system, the immune, and the cardiovascular system, as well as the kidneys. Let's not leave them out. And 37% can affect the endocrine system, with 25% being carcinogens and mutagens. Last week, if you were here, you were told that the DEC is requiring the companies to state what is in their mix. She did say also that they are not required to tell you how much of any of these components is in. And it's very important to know how much of something you're being contaminated with, because there is a threshold limit. A little bit of something may not hurt you. If you work in an industrial situation, you are exposed to toxic chemicals, possibly, where you work, but as long as they keep it below those threshold limits, supposedly you're okay. But if you don't know how much you're being exposed to, how do you know if you're going to be okay or not? So that was a rather interesting bit of information about this.
Excuse me.
Yes.
I wasn't here last week, but did she also talk about the trade secret rules where they're allowed to not disclose certain things because they're trade secrets?
What she said about that was that the DEC is requiring that everything is disclosed except the amounts. So the trade secret is the mix. How much of this, how much of that, the recipe, if you will. So they're still getting away with not disclosing that. And that's the important part. You know, you need to know how much of something is in there. How much, if it's a tiny little bit, yeah, maybe it won't bother you. But if it's a lot, you got to know that. So we talk now about water. How much water is being used? 3 to 8 million gallons for a typical well. That's a lot.
1 week.
And that could be within a week. 3 to 8 million gallons per well. Now, I mentioned that each pad could have 6 wells on it, so you do the math, and you're looking at a lot of water. The Susquehanna River did go down, according to Barbara, you know, because of the usage. They're trucking in lots of water to do this. Some of these may be fracked more than once over the lifetime of the well, because the fissures do tend to close up over time, just as my water well did, and they need to be refracked. So over a course of 20 years, let's say, the lifetime of that well, you might be using 3 to 8 million gallons many times. That's a lot of water. And, you know, it may be that there's a lot more water under the ground than 3 to 8 million gallons each well, but we are facing some serious challenges with water in our country. If you're not aware of that, with climate change, we are lucky here in the Northeast. We do have quite an abundance of water. We need to keep it clean, of course, but in other parts of the country, they're suffering. And with climate change, that may happen to us as well. We'll see. Yes?
What happens to the water after fracking is done? The wastewater?
The wastewater is never going to be as clean as it ever was, so they reuse it.
Because it was said last week that some of it goes out to other states, like Ohio.
Yeah, they're pumping it into deep wells in Ohio, which are causing, that's a whole other thing, they're causing seismic activity in some areas because of the amount of water they're putting down into those areas. You know, so it's becoming somebody else's headache. You know, supposedly they're safe. Yes?
What is natural gas used for?
Natural gas is used for vehicles. It's used for heating homes. It's used for making electricity. It's used for a lot. It's a fuel like any other fossil fuel. It's burnt. Oh, yeah, it definitely does. And I said that earlier. It's a good transition fuel to get off of coal and oil to go towards what I would call cleaner methods of energy. It is a good transition fuel because it is less polluting. There's no question about it. It is more efficient and less polluting. But it's dirty as well. I mean, it's still giving off carbon dioxide, and we'll talk about that too. Yes?
Do you know in the five counties where I gather they're thinking about allowing some testing, what the proposed source of the water is in those five counties?
No, I don't know that.
Also in Susquehanna, doesn't that go up?
Oh, yes, yes. As well as the Shenango. The Delaware River goes through that area too, yeah. There's you know, there's a lot of water around, but you know, we've got to watch what we do with it. That's one of my other issues. If you've seen the movie Tapped, anybody know about the movie Tapped? That's about how we take, would you mind holding that bottle up, please? How Poland Spring takes water out of places and uses it to bottle it and sell it to people for a lot more than you couldn't get it out of your tap. And it's, you know, we abuse water tremendously in this country. So that's a lot of water to be using in any case. Then the air. The air is also a place where we have a problem with hydrofracking. We talk well-to-burner emissions of 3.5 to 12% higher than conventional gas. Conventional gas is, by that we mean you're drilling a vertical well only, no hydrofracking. So what happens here is because of the process of hydrofracking, which includes all the externalities like the trucks, the amount of trucks you have to move in and out, that's polluting the air. the amount of time that you're doing this, the amount of other fuels you're using to run the compressors and so on. So you're getting a lot more emissions doing hydrofracking than if you just use conventional gas. Yes?
Can you just differentiate between what you mean by conventional gas and methane gas? And
well, conventional gas just means the method of getting it out of the ground. The conventional gas, what they mean here is the vertical well, no hydrofracking. Okay.
Same gas, right?
Same gas, natural gas, CH4.
Can you get conventional gas out of the Marcellus Shale?
No. And the reason why is because it's the Marcellus Shale is so tight, the gas is within the rock so tightly placed in there that you need to frack it to release it. This was a Cornell University study that states 3.6 to 7.9 of the methane from shale gas goes into the atmosphere in one way, shape, or form. It's getting into the atmosphere. And that is very, very bad because methane is a very, very strong greenhouse gas. It is stronger than carbon dioxide. It is really bad stuff. So, you know, we don't talk much. Everybody's worried about carbon dioxide because we put a tremendous amount of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. But methane is also a strong greenhouse gas, and it's we have a big problem with that. That's another subject, I know, and it's one of my favorite ones. But. Yes, sir?
I don't want to dwell on methane.
No.
But
that's what we're talking about.
Unburned methane or burned methane?
Because here? Here, this is unburned methane. Yeah, okay. This is escaping from the well, escaping from the whole process of getting it. You know, you're just allowing this gas to come out. Once it's burned, it's carbon dioxide for the most part and water. But here, this is, as I said, this is a much stronger greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. So it's creating another whole issue.
So the carbon dioxide that's created from burned methane is
same carbon dioxide.
Substantively no different than the carbon
dioxide. Right, and there's actually less of it than if you burned gasoline or oil. That was
it's
in the previous
the gas
slide.
Itself.
Right.
Because I know the beef industry was under a lot of attack at some point because of the amount of methane that emerges from cap.
Mm-hmm. Because we eat too many cheeseburgers. Right. That's true. I like to let this speak for itself. This is habitat fragmentation. And you could just take a look at that. These are well pads with the roads. And basically, this is destroying habitats. Fragmentation means that the habitat is so broken into sections that migration patterns, habitat loss, ecosystem disruption are extensive enough to cause major changes in the lives of plants and animals in that area, in that ecosystem, causing many to leave, which lowers the biodiversity, which lowers the quality of life in that ecosystem for you as well. Biodiversity is very important to humans and all other creatures on Earth. Without it, things go downhill quickly. I just showed my students the movie Medicine Man. And if you've ever seen Medicine Man, Sean Connery, and what's her name? Bracco, Lorraine Bracco. And it talks about the Amazon rainforest, and he found a cure for cancer because of the great biodiversity there. He didn't know what was his cure. He thought it was the flowers. It was actually the bugs in the flowers, but that's another story. But it's because of biodiversity. You need that biodiversity in order to find these things. If you don't have it, they disappear, and they could disappear forever. So this is an example of fragmenting the habitat so that you're going to lose some of that biodiversity in these areas. This is, you know, this is not conducive to deer populations growing. This is conducive to them leaving the area. Now, not that everybody likes deer. They hit your car, they make a mess. But there are good things to be had from them. Yes?
Will you be touching upon the delivery systems, which includes, you know, pipelines and compressors that have to be built in order to deliver this?
I'm not going to go into any extensive detail on that, but yeah, that's very true that, you know, besides these are the well pads. Once the wells come down and you're just looking at the just the gas, she described it as, you know, this pipe sticking out of the ground that high. That's all well and good, but under the ground, then there's all the the piping that has to go on. And that's not as disruptive to the ecosystem, but it's still there. And creating it, creating those pipelines is destructive in and of itself. So this is, I'm sorry, yes?
Where was that picture taken, you know?
I believe this is actually from Wyoming, okay? But it's typical of what's taking place in other areas. Pennsylvania has similar views like this. The New York State DEC, the General Environmental Impact Statement of 2011 said that we in New York could have 50 to 60,000 gas wells covering most of upstate and southern regions. So it will begin to look like this. If things go the way the gas companies want, it would begin to look like this as well in New York State. Farmland. There can be some of these contaminants being absorbed into livestock and plant matter. There was an incident of a well leased on the Ferno Experimental Forest in West Virginia. They released some flowback fluid into the air on vegetation after drilling was completed, and they did this because it was an assumption that the flowback met the standards on the permit and there would be no damage. Well, that's not the case. However, there was total vegetation mortality almost immediately after the flowback was applied, and even taller trees dropped 45% of their leaf biomass prematurely. That was a study done by Adams in 2012. So this material is potentially catastrophic to an ecosystem, and you're part of that ecosystem, so keep that in mind. I use this picture again because you're not farming there. You look at that, that's again a similar picture to what we just saw. There's not much farmland there, you know, really. You're fragmenting it. Maybe you can plant a few things in between, but it's using up farmland as well. Noise pollution. In 1992, there was an impact statement done in New York State on oil, gas, and other mining. And they were talking about noise at the time. And horizontal drilling is in general similar, except that the greatest difference was the amount of it, the duration of it. So the noise is going to be similar to what they passed back in 1992, except now you're getting a lot more of that for a longer period of time, 4 to 5 weeks for the drilling. And then you've got, you know, more fluid handling, pumping, more noise anticipated than they talked about in 1992. And that's about 3 to 5 more days. So you're looking at about, you know, 6-7 weeks of all this noise going on in your area. So that you know, and noise can be a real problem.
Does this mean that the process of fracking will take place over 7 weeks, then they leave and they move on to the next pod, or?
Yeah. Yeah, once they frack this area, they'll go to the next pad, and you know, or they're doing multiples at a time. I mean, you know, I don't know how each company works individually, but yeah, they're going to do that area. But remember what I said earlier, that over a 20-year period, these wells may be additionally fracked if they need it. If it's a successful well and they want to get more gas out of it and it's closing up, they can go back in there and start that process again. Not the drilling, because the drilling's been done, but they're going to go back there and do the fracking part of it again. So you're susceptible to that noise. And then the compressors that the lady mentioned before about just the compressors to get the gas into the pipelines, those compressors are rather noisy as well. So noise pollution is a problem. Light pollution. They do this 24/7. They don't stop. As a matter of fact, the woman Barbara was telling me that what they do for these hotels is that they have the crews sleeping in the same bed. The night crew sleeps in the bed during the day, and the day crew sleeps, it's like a submarine. She described it as what they do on a submarine. The crews are sleeping round the clock, the crews are working round the clock. So you've got night skies being lit up by this. Another major source is the flaring. When they get gas out, they flare it for a period of time to allow impurities and so on before they have it capped off, And here's a picture of what that could look like. I don't know if you can see that well, but this is a huge flare, and you can see the area around it's quite lit up. You're trying to sleep at night, you got that outside your door, that's not going to be very pleasant. So there's light pollution as well. This kind of speaks for itself again. This is the roads. These things have to get to and from the well site. These are huge trucks. When she told me about her road being destroyed and turned into a dirt road, these aren't your typical trucks that you see riding around town here. These are huge. You've got huge amounts of chemicals and water being transferred. You know, this isn't going to hold maybe 4,000 gallons of water. We're talking millions of gallons of water. So think about it. How many trucks have to go through to get those millions of gallons of water to this site where it's going to be hydrofracking? And then out. They're going in and out all day long. So there's a tremendous amount of road traffic and tearing up the roads, apparently, from what Barbara told me. So you can see, you know, what I said, it's going to be a problem. And what about the traffic safety? You know, who's going to monitor the safety? You've got kids riding their bicycles, all these big trucks going by, whatever the case may be. You know, you're trying to walk down the road, and you got tremendous trucks. These are big, heavy trucks. You can see that they have three axles in the back because they're so big and heavy. So you have a big problem with that. Economic development is always something the gas industry wants to say. We're going to bring jobs to your area. We're going to make you prosper. Well, Barbara told me that, yes, as the lady, Mrs. Moreau, said last week, the farmers do make out. And she admitted, yes, there are some farmers that did make out very well. They were selling their rights. They were able to get enough money to save their farm, pass it on to their children, or retire from their farming and be, you know, well off. But that's not the whole story. 1.1 million jobs could be created across the United States by 2020. But are these jobs all new jobs? Well, we'll see. Bureau of Labor Statistics said that new jobs in Pennsylvania, 4,144. That's not millions. That's 4,144, Bureau of Labor Statistics. So that's not quite what they're saying. When they decommission wells, they send these workers to other places. It saves the gas companies money to take the trained workers from here and bring them here instead of hiring a whole new set of people here. They're not doing that. We talked about the man camps before. You know, my nephew saw it. Barbara was telling us about it. That they're taking people, you know, the license plates were Texas in Pennsylvania. That's what's going to happen. They're not going to take all these people that are out of work in New York and say, hey, we're going to make gas drillers out of you. That's not going to happen. Yeah, there'll be some jobs. There'll be some jobs for hotel workers. There'll be some jobs for the convenience store worker, you know, the gas station attendants and so on. There'll be some jobs. But when these guys leave, where do you think those jobs are going? You can follow them with to the next job, or you can be unemployed again in New York. So, you know, this is something that the gas company's telling you, jobs, jobs, jobs. Well, it isn't quite the case they're saying. Another thing about economic development that I don't have up here, but in Texas, property values were 70% less than if there was no fracking. 70% less for their property because of fracking. Yes, sir?
Any chance that there's an equal number assessed for the traditional scrape drilling or oil drilling?
No, I didn't get that kind of data. That's a good thought, but I didn't have that in my report. So, what should be done? One of my major sources was a study called Hydraulic Fracturing in New York State. It was done by Schaefer Williams Mook of St. Lawrence University in Canton, New York. And these are their ideas. I'm not going to take credit for these, but I do agree with some of them. Number one, ban hydrofracking completely. Wouldn't that be great? Except, let's be realistic. That isn't going to happen. That isn't going to happen. No. It's way too complex a political issue. I mean, come on, look at the politics in this country. That isn't going to happen. Allow bigger fines and jail time Sounds great, but what's the court system's going to be like if we had to go through this every time somebody made a mistake in hydrofracking? This might work in some cases, but in the long run, I think it would tie up the court systems and probably wouldn't result in as much jail time or fines. This third one's a pretty good one. Allow hydrofracking with greater restrictions, better monitoring, under mandatory restoration pledges from the company. Well, if you can believe that. But again, you know, this is going to take an awful lot of people watching over this. And I know DEC doesn't have the personnel. The fourth one, allow a temporary ban on hydrofracking, do a lot more research. Make sure the technology is there. The government chooses the land, the least ecologically valuable lands, and there are some. There are abandoned industrial sites. These things are an eyesore anyway. Let the companies go there and build their pads and do their drilling in those areas. And certainly not near population or wetlands or aquifers. It's interesting that the New York City watershed and the Syracuse watershed were left out of any fracking. What about the rest of our water? Think about that. Companies would bid for the rights to explore, and that money would be used for monitoring the wells, doing impact studies, and very importantly, educating the operators. Educating these operators so they know how important their work is, so they're not sloppy, so that they do the job the right way. And you know, that is, these were the ideas. The third and the fourth, they said in the article, in the paper that I read, the third and the fourth were the ones that they liked the best, they felt were the most feasible. And quite possible. I have my own feelings on this, and my feelings are this. If you want to do something about any energy issue, conserve. That's the most important thing you can do, is to conserve. The more we conserve, the more we learn how to use our energy wisely, the less we'll have to do this kind of stuff. So that's it. I've got my sources here. If anybody has any interest, there are 3 pages of sources. I did my homework. And if you want to see any of these, I'll be glad to show you them. And that's my final thought. So now we've been getting questions all along, so if there are any more questions, please feel free to ask, and I hope I can answer.
How big was the drill pit when he drilled the ground?
I don't know that. Last week she described it as a multiple process where they get gradually smaller and smaller as you go down. So you start out a good size.
So you get less and less concrete.
The idea that she described was that you're getting actually more and more, but because when you've got the big one, it's lined with concrete, then you go to a smaller one lined with concrete, and so on and so on. So you're getting concrete, metal, concrete, metal, concrete, metal. I haven't seen any diagrams that showed that. What they showed, the concrete only around the juncture of the large diameter pipe to the small diameter pipe. That's only where the concrete was used.